Okay, we're starting Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. We just did the Mishnah that talked about the fact that Tchum applies not only to the people, but also to the Kelim and also to the food and everything. So you have to make sure not to bring food outside of the Tchum, that the food itself has at the Tchilas Hayom. And it gives an example of where this would be an issue, is if you have, let's say, on Yontif, somebody borrows some ingredients from a neighbor, and let's say normally the neighbor and you are going to have the same tchum, but let's say they don't. So if you don't have the same tchum, so then if you're going to make food using ingredients that came from next door, and those ingredients had one tchum and you have a different tchum, then you have to be careful not to bring the product outside of either tchum, because you have to treat the ingredients with the restrictions that they had based on the tchum that they had with Tchilas Hayom. And in the Mishnah it says, Rabbi Yehuda, poter v'mayim mipnei she'ein bahem mamish. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, that's not true about water. If you needed to borrow fresh water from a neighbor, then we're not going to insist that that water keep its tchum, and that therefore the food product be restricted to the tchum of the provider of the water. But the other ingredients, like the tavlin and the melach, we do say that they remain. The Gemara, so that was a machlokes ha-tanayim, whether water is going to be subject to the restrictions of tchum. So now we're in our Gemara. Lam tes amud aleph, third line from the top. Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda poter b'mayim, quotes the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, says that water is exempt from this. Water does not retain its tchum restriction, its tchum status. Gemara says, hold on a minute, but he really only was carving mayim out of this? Mayim in? Melach lo? But melach, he would concede that melach is like other foods, that it retains its tchum restrictions? But we know that can't be so, because it goes against the braisa. The Hatani Rabbi Yehuda Omer mayim u'melach. And exactly where the wording of the braisa is over here is a subject to a girsa problem. Our Gemara has the girsa one way, and a number of the people on the side point out a different girsa. It's not going to make a difference. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda, the Braisa quotes Rabbi Yehuda saying, Mayim u'melach are betalin. That Mayim u'melach are betalin, which means that they lose their identity. Because they lose their identity, they're not subject to the restrictions of the tchum. In which case then, if I only borrow Mayim, or if I only borrow melach, or Mayim u'melach, then I don't have to be concerned about the original tchum that the Mayim Melech came from, and I should be able to move the food wherever I want to, because those ingredients become batel in the overall food. So it's a stira. What did Rabbi Yehuda say about salt? The Gemara answers, Lo kashya ha b'melach sedomis, and ha b'melach istrokenis. Gemara says, well, we're talking about two different kinds of salt. In our Mishnah, which made reference to salt in the Tanakam, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the salt, that's talking about the kind of a salt where the salt is nicker in the food. The salt is nicker in the food because they're big crystals or they're big chunks or something, and so the salt is nicker. As opposed to, that's what the Gemara is calling here, the melachis strokeness. But when we talk about salt being like water in the sense that it can dissolve into the food and disappear and not be noticeable, that would be melach sedomis. Now Rashi points out, you see that melach sedomis can disappear, and you not even notice it. And he considers that to be the issue involved in mayim achronim. That the reason why there's a takana derabanan of mayim achronim is because of melach sedomis. Why? Rashi says because the melach sedomis has the property of being so fine that you could have it on your hands and not even realize it. And so that's what's going on over here, is that the melach is able to disappear and therefore to lose its tchum. But if it's bigger chunks, bigger coarser salts, apparently that doesn't disappear. I don't know what the metzias is exactly. I don't know. I mean, I would understand if we're talking about salt like on the pretzels where the salt is be'en is one thing. But if it's just salt inside a food, and no matter what it starts out with and what size of crystals are, they're going to eventually dissolve. So I don't exactly understand it. But that's what it says over here. It's not relevant l'halacha l'maisa in any case, because we don't pass k'lachar Bihuda on either of these shitos, even with respect to water. We're not going to follow Rabbi Huda. So we're going to even consider water to be to retain its original tum properties. So we're not going to hold like Rabbi Huda. Anyway, but this is within Rabbi Huda, the chiluk. And the Gemara has another problem. He says, I don't understand. Rabbi Yehuda is holding that mayim u'melach for certain cases, or just mayim in certain cases, are batel in the concoction. But we have a different braisa that says, v'hatani Rabbi Yehuda omer mayim u'melach betelin be'isa v'ein betelin be'kedera. But we have another braisa that where Rabbi Yehuda actually does not just say kind of categorically that water is batel and melach is or isn't batel depending on the melach. No, we now have a split between are we putting the ingredients into an isa or into a kedera. An isa is a dough. You put the ingredients into the dough and the product that you end up with is just going to be a big blob of dough, as opposed to a kedera where you put ingredients into the kedera and it's all, a lot of it's still going to be be'en, a lot of it's still going to be noticeable, and it doesn't exactly transform into a different kind of a product. So the Gemara says, let's say water or salt, betelim be'isa ve'en betelim be'kedera. If you borrow water and that's what you use to cook your food as a stew or something, a soup, then the water has to be recognized and it can't become treated as batel. Mipnei rotva, because the water is still there. So Gemara says, well, obviously it depends on how, on what kind of a stew you're making. Lokasha habayava habaraka. If you're making a stew where the or a soup where the water is clearly still there, so then you can't ignore it. But if the but if it's just going to become a kind of a more solid stew, or a cholent, or a thick soup where you don't see the water as watery, so then Rabbi Yehuda would then concede that the water is batel. That would be the situation where Rabbi Yehuda would say the water is batel. But if the water is sitting there, plainly visible, then you can't say it's batel. Anyway, like I say, we don't paskin Rabbi Yehuda in any case. Okay, the Mishnah says, the Mishnah says now, we're actually back to an issue that we brought up a couple of dafim earlier about the difference between an eish, that's a solid thing that's burning, versus an eish, that's a gaseous thing that's burning. So let's take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hagacheles, which is a glowing ember, keragle habalim. So that is going to actually have a tchum based on, like all the other kelim that somebody owns. But eshal heves b'chol makom. But a flame is not tied to any tchum. So what's the example of a flame not being tied to a tchum? It means like, let's say I have my candle burning over here, and somebody comes by, and yet if you're allowed to do this, and somebody comes by with their unlit candle, and they take their unlit candle and they ignite it based on my flame, and then they walk over to theirs. Is that flame now confined to my tchum? Or is that irrelevant to their now? They just have to be careful. They just have to deal with their own tchum. So that's what it says over here. Is that Ashal Heves is b'chol makom. The fact that they got their flame from my fire does not restrict their candle to my tchum. Because Ashal Heves is b'chol makom.
So they're separating the two things. The candle.
Right.
And the flame.
Well, you mean the candle because that's a solid object.
Right, you're transferring
right. So
that
he's
around.
Gonna so that person was using his own candle. They'll have to deal with the tchum restriction on the candle. Okay. But the question about whether the fact that they got the flame from me should restrict their movement, and that's what we're being told here in the Mishnah, no. But a gecheles, a solid object, and the comparison between both of these is that they're both an eish. So it says here in the Mishnah, ha gecheles shel hekdesh molin ba. If, let's say, you have a gecheles that's from hekdesh, that has hekdesh restrictions, Molin ba. One of the restrictions of hekdesh is that you're not allowed to get hana from it, and if you do, you have to bring a korban asham me'ilos. So it says here, molin ba. If somebody is nehana from the gecheles of hekdesh, then we will insist that they deal with their violation of me'ila. And ashal heves, though, lo nehanin velo mo'alin. But if you use ashal heves of hekdesh, we won't consider you to be chayiv me'ila, although it does say lo nanin, which is something that the Gemara is going to pick up on. The Gemara is going to say, but so then why are you not permitted? Lechatchila lo nanin means you're not allowed to get hana from the shalhevis of hekdesh, even though if you did, you wouldn't be considered a moel. But the Gemara is going to discuss a little bit that chiluk. And then the Gemara says the third point about a chiluk between the gecheles and the shalheves is hamotzi gecheles or shusarabim chayiv, the shalheves pater. And the third distinction here that the Mishnah brings up is that if you transport, if you move a gecheles from inside to outside, you do hotzah on a gecheles, then you're chayiv. That's a regular object. But a shalheves pater. But if you move a shalheves from inside to outside, whatever that means. What does that mean? You move a shalheves outside.
Yeah.
So it means like this. The Gemara is going to have some possibility about what it could mean. And the Gemara is going to discuss it. Okay, maybe we'll wait. We'll hold up until the Gemara gets to weigh in on this, what that means. All right, Gemara says, Tana Rabbana. And Bryce actually amplifies on the three cases. The Mishnah only had three kind of contrasts between a gecheles and a shalheves. And the Bryce is going to have a few more. Tana Rabbanan, Chamisha Dvarim Ne'emru B'Gecheles. The Braisa lists five distinctions, I guess, between the Gecheles and the Shalheves. A Gecheles, Kiraglai Haba'alim, V'Shalheves B'Chol Makom. Like it says in our Mishnah, that a Gecheles does have Tchum, pursuant to whatever the rules of any other Kli would have, but a Shalheves doesn't have that. B'Chol Makom. Okay, that's the same as our Mishnah. A Gecheles Shal Hekdesh, Mo'olin Ba. It's nice when the Braisa doesn't contradict. So it's consistent. The Braisa says the Gecheles of Hekdesh is fully Hekdesh with the full restrictions and consequences of being Moel. But a Shalheves not. You're not allowed to be Nana, that's true, like it says in our Mishnah, but Lo Moelin. But we don't consider Yechayev to bring in Hashem Me'ilos. And a Gecheles, and there's the new one, a Gecheles Shal Avodah Zarah. If let's say there's a din that any object that is itself either an avodah zara or has a couple of auxiliary statuses relating to the avodah zara, they carry an iser hana. So it says here a gecheles shel avodah zara asura. You're not allowed to be nehana from a gecheles that has avodah zara status. Ava shalheves muteres, but the shalheves of avodah zara you're allowed. Even the chatchil it says. Even lechatchila, you're allowed to go and be nehene from the flame. If you can imagine a kind of a flame that's a noy avodah zara that's being used in some temple, or whatever, to make the place nicer, you're permitted to go over there and to, I don't know, light up your candle or your whatever the thing is that you would be doing. In some earlier era, I would have used maybe smoking as an example of this, but I'm not going to use that as an example. That's not who we're going to recommend.
No, and nobody would think that.
Nobody would even understand what I'm talking about even anyway. So
nobody would think because you're transferring a flame from your candle that you're also over Avodah Zarah.
That's true, except that's not what this is about. The Isra Hana is not related to a fear that people are going to think that you're worshipping. That there are
no
prohibitions like that. It's not like a Marasayan-based thing. It's purely an Isra Hana. The Pasuk just says, Lo Yidbak B'Yadcham U'mim Menachem. You're not allowed to have any Avodah Zarah stuff that you use. And it's just a kind of a categorical prohibition, regardless of whether that looks like you are or aren't worshipping it. But what you're saying is that there might have been an additional prohibition of a Marasayan also. So right. That may or may not still be true. It's just that it wouldn't be a violation of the Isur Hana. And then the fourth one it says over here is like it says in the Mishnah. It says, HaMotzi Gecheles Rishus Rabim Chayiv HaShalheves Pater. And the fifth one, that's like the Mishnah. And the fifth one is a new one also, HaMuder Hanoa Mechaveiro. Aser b'gechalto umuter b'shalhevaso. Okay, this is a new thing. The concept is that this whole concept of a muter hana is totally, totally foreign to us. We do not have any exposure to this concept at all. There was a time, maybe when people were more comfortable around hekdesh things, that they used to consider hekdesh to be a real category, a real type of a description of an item as being hekdesh, and they understood hekdesh means taboo. It means It means off limits. And so sometimes the way they used to talk would be something like that, you know, I don't want that guy using my stuff, so I declare my stuff hekdesh-like for that person's purposes, which is just another way of saying, I oster him from using my stuff, or vice versa, or I don't want to use his stuff, so I consider his stuff hekdesh-like for my stuff. This is the concept of a neder. The neder means that it's forbidden for me to be nehenna from that stuff, or my own stuff, or that person to be nehenna from my stuff. All of those different ways of creating an Iser Hana. Okay, so you get Iser Hana going on, but it's something that you make up. You can make up the Iser Hana, so that's called a neder. So Amudr Hana Mechaviro, let's say somebody took such a neder where that person is not allowed to be nehenna from my stuff. So are they allowed to be nehenna from my gecheles, or my eish? So this Bryce is saying over here, well, they're not allowed to be nehenna from my gecheles. That'll be a violation of the Yisra Hanah, but they would be allowed to come and light their, if they have to light their barbecue, whatever, from my flame, go ahead, because that's not going to be a violation of the Yisra Hanah. That's what it says. Mutar b'shel hevaso. Okay, that's the end of the Bryce. This wasn't really a controversial Bryce or anything. It was just a kind of a supplemental Bryce that amplifies a little bit what the information of our Mishnah is. Mar says now here, just it's kind of curious. Maishna shall heves the avodah zara, the sharia. Why did they make the avodah zara flame mutter to be nehenah from, but a maishna the hekdesh the asira? But why is the flame of hekdesh aser to be nehenah from? That happened to have been one slight wrinkle in the otherwise uniform ruling of the shall heves. Shall heves should have counted as nothing. Why did they aser the... So Rashi makes it clear that the spirit of the question is, why did the Chazal forbid it? And that's clear from the Gemara also. They forbade you from being nehenah from a flame of hekdesh. Gemara says, well, avodah zara de me'isa ubedili in shimine lo gazra barabana. Well, avodah zara they left as the way it should normally have been, based on the regular rules. In other words, totally permissible. And they didn't feel any imperative to clamp down on it, because they didn't see any risks involved in allowing people to be nehenah from an avodah zara flame. But hekdesh delo moyes velo bedili in shimine. But hekdesh is not something that people stay away from. Velo bedili in shimine. People have hekdesh around, and they are kind of familiar with hekdesh, and they're likely to have hekdesh things around. If they become a little too comfortable with hekdesh use, that could lead to problems. And so that they perceive that that's risky to allow people to take a flame of hekdesh, then the next thing that you're going to realize is that they're going to start taking other kinds of things and using them from hekdesh, so that they saw as being risky, and they forbade that. All right, two dots. The Mishnah continues, Amotzi gecheles rishus harabi mechayiv shel heves pater. Okay, that's the Mishnah contrast between hotza of a gecheles, versus hotza of a shel heves, which is pater. Interestingly, it does say pater, it doesn't say mutar, although they might be for other reasons. Two dots. It says v'hatanya, but the problem is, the Gemara says, is it raises a contradiction. V'hatanya hamotzi shel heves kol shehu chayiv. There is a brisa that says that you are chayiv for being motzi a shel heves. So of course, what issue is going on is, how in the world are you doing either of these things? How are you being motzi the shel heves in such ways to be pater or to be chayiv? The Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshes, yeah, it depends, what did you do? Rav Sheshes, the Amora, explains what's going on. The one brisa is talking about one case, and the Mishnah is talking about a different case. Kigon shehotziyo bekisam. Well, the when it says in the brisa that you're chayiv, it's talking about that you're motzi the shel heves on a match. So you took a match out. The Gemara says, well, then you're chayiv for the match.
Correct.
So that can't be what's going on. You have to figure out how you're going to be motzi the shel heves without another object that's already going to make you chayiv. Tebeglei mishum kisim. The Gemara says, no. We're talking about a small kisim, but the less le shiura. Because on Shabbos, we're not used to thinking of this because it's not relevant l'alacha l'maisa, but de oraisa, if you carry under the radar, if you carry things that are insignificant enough, you're pater from that carrying. And so it's theoretically possible to have the object escape the chiyuv, because it's too small. But if the shalheves were chayiv, then that would have been the basis of the chayiv and not the match. That's what the Gemara is suggesting over here, is that, well, maybe I'm talking about a tiny kisim of a type where it's less than the requisite shear. Because there is a Mishnah that says, well, when I take little bits of wood, how much would I need to be chayiv? What is the shear of hotzah? The Gemara says this not as Mishnah says in Shabbos. Hamotzi eitzim. If I'm carrying bits of wood, kidei levashel beitza kala. The only time I would be chayiv is if there's enough wood there to be able to keep a flame long enough to be able to cook a small egg. Okay, so probably a match wouldn't be enough for these purposes. So even a regular match would be enough to be... The match would not be enough to make a chiyuv. If the shalheves were chayiv, then I would have. And that's what's going on. Well, wait a second. What's going on? What happened over here? Which was the case that I'm chayiv on the shalheves, and which was the case that I'm pater on the shalheves? So we just came to the point where I'm chayiv for the shalheves because I carried the shalheves out on a match. And the match itself is not the basis of the chiyuv, it's the flame. So why? Why would I be chayiv for such a thing? So it's not clear to me why I would be chayiv for such a thing. Why am I chayiv for such a thing, for such a little thing? I don't know why.
Wait, I don't understand, what's the question?
I'm not sure why I'm chayiv for the shalheves, where I'm carrying the shalheves out on a match.
Match. When the match is so insignificant, it wouldn't
be match under itself,
the
radar.
But the shalheves itself has significance, is the argument. No?
But then if that's the case, yeah, so then right. In the Mishnah, where the shalheves didn't right. have, is treated as pater, so right. How did that happen? Right. So we're going to have to see. The Gemara's going to say, well, then I don't even understand how else you can bring out a flame if not on a match
right.
or something. All right, the Gemara's going to clarify. Maybe right. maybe it'll become clearer when we get to the end of the sugya.
Well, you can take out a flame on a match, a candle, or anything else.
By the way, that can. You need, do that.
You need product of combustion, okay, and then you need the flame.
Yeah.
So what they're saying is the flame doesn't count,
right?
Okay, because it's putter.
Right,
by itself, and the match is so insignificant that it doesn't count.
Right, so I should be putter altogether.
So I can bring a match to your house.
Right, but it says in the brisa that I'm chayiv right. if I did that.
That's the problem.
Right.
So the problem is that you have to account for. So there must be something wrong with what we just said.
Something.
Okay, Abaye Amar. Abaye does what pretty much amounts to exactly the same explanation as Rav Sheshis says. But anyway, Abaye says, I can give you another example, which is going to amount to the same thing. Could go into Shaifei Manel Mishcha. The Asli Ba Nura. Well, Rabbi says, well, okay, maybe it's that I had a little scrap of cheres and I smear some fuel on it and then I ignite that and that's what I'm carrying around. Igmar says, well, it's the same problem. How'd you solve anything with that? Typically, Mishamana. Well, how did you solve the problem? You're going to be carrying the kli. Igmar says, well, it's a chaspa. It's not a kli. It's just a broken shard of cheres. Gemara says, well, typically mishum chaspa. The Gemara says, no, but the less lay shiur. We'll talk about one that's too small or too worthless. This not a cheres kedei litein bein pitzim lechavei rau. The Gemara says, a cheres, the only shiur would be if it could serve like as a wedge or something. The Gemara says, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, etc. So the point is that there is such a thing as a minimum shiur, and that's the case, and that's where I would be chayiv. The Gemara says, well, hold on a minute. If you're going to be chayiv under those conditions, elohad is not hamotzi shalheves pater eichim mishkachasla. So then what's the case in the Mishnah where I'm pater from? I'm not entirely sure that this question is the question that we had before exactly. It's a slightly different question. I think the question was like more of how did you accomplish bringing a flame out without having the object that's burning with you. It's not necessarily conceptually, is like, why should a flame that's on the match be different from a flame that's not on the match? I'm not exactly sure. But in any case, the Gemara answers, well, could go on the Adye Yedui L'Rishus Rabim, which essentially means, like, Rabbeinu Hanan is explicit here, it means that there was a big fire near the edge of my yard, and my yard is enclosed. And I blew the flame out, and so I blew the flame over to the other property, and it blew over there, and it caught on something over there, and now it's over there. So in other words, I moved my flame over to there. Now it's true that I've also done Havara, which is a different thing. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about just with respect to carrying things from the private place to the public place, apparently blowing a flame over and having it, I guess, land over there. Because for carrying, you always have to have it. It has to be landed over here. It says land over there. So it lands over there. And that's where I'm being told in the Mishnah, Patur, because I somehow or other got the flame, the gases of the flame to move over there, and that's intangible. So that's the Patur. Okay, I don't know exactly.
You don't even have to blow it, just the heat of itself.
Well, yeah, but then you can't question whether I've done something that's chayv. But the point is that even though I've done something that would appear to be chayv, because if this were other objects, if I actually took an object that was actually the ball was sitting there and I blew it over there, I am chayv for that. That's moving it over. So the flame, it is something that's different about it being a flame. Okay. In any case, I can't say that I get 100% clarity on what the chiluk is over there and what the flame should be different. But in any case, that's what it says here. Okay. Mishnah says, the next Mishnah says, Bor shel yachid kiragli ha-yachid v'shel anshei osa ha'ir kiragli anshei osa ha'ir. We're talking now about the tchum of something like water from the well. The water from the well. You know, you can have a well which is fed from a stream. And you can have also a well. It's not really a well. It's more like a cistern that's containing the water, that the water pours in from the drainage, from the rainwater. And it's just self-contained. So those are the two different kinds of systems that might feed your water, your well. In any case, this is a bore. Generally speaking, a bore is not fed from fresh water. It's just a container of water, as opposed to a be'er, which would normally be flowing water, or a river or something. So now the Mishnah is saying the following. Bor shel yachid. If I have in my yard, I have a cistern, I have a water reservoir. Kiragli ha-yachid. So all the water has my tchum. V'shel anshei osa ha'ir. Kiragli anshei osa ha'ir. Or if I have a public well, which is public to the extent of it being maintained by the city, so then it is considered shared by the members of the city. V'shel olei bavel. Kiragli ha-memale. But if we're talking about a totally public well, which would be, or a totally public bore, which is in, it's not necessarily within the district of the city, it's more like out on the roads, on the intercity roads, or even if it happens to be located within, let's say, the municipal boundaries, but the point is that it is maintained by, like, the Klal Yisrael funds. And so that would be, we would consider that to be purely public, what's called Ole Bavel, and it's not necessarily maintained by the city, by the municipality. So then it says, Kiragli Hamamale. Then anybody who comes there and takes water from that, that becomes the Tchum, and you don't regard anybody else's ownership rights, or if there are any such, we'll talk about that. And it's Kiragli Hamamale. Okay, straightforward. So it has three chilukim in the Mishnah. It says the Yachid, it says the Ear, and it says the Ole Bavel. Gemara says, Rami Le Rava Le Rav Nachman. Rava challenged Rav Nachman with the following contradiction. Tanan, it says in our Mishnah, Bor Shel Yachid Kiragli HaYachid. Right, it says that in the Mishnah. Veraminu, but he has a kasha because he found a Braisa, Tosefta in this case, that says the following, Neharosa Moshkinu Mayanosa Novim, Harehein, Kiragli Kol Adam. If I have water that, let's say, is flowing through my backyard, and it's coming from a brook, or a creek, or a river or something, whether or not it goes out of my yard, that's not the point. The point is that if that water that's in there, Harehein, Kiragli Kol Adam, that doesn't have the tchum of my own thing, despite it being on, let's say, private property. That's not going to have the tchum of the water. The water is going to be like non-tchum. It says, Kiragli Kol Adam. So he answers him, Hachab Mayaskinan, Rabba or Rava, which I don't know why Rabba or Rava have just chimed in over here, since this was a question that Rava asked Rav Nachman. Okay, I don't know. Anyway, Hachab Mayaskinan, B'mechunasim, which means, but in our Mishnah, we're talking about just an ordinary cistern. It's just a container of water. It's not flowing in. The difference being that when water is flowing in, where were the molecules of the water at B'tchilas Hayom? They weren't here. They were somewhere else. They made their way over here at my property sometime during the day. But if it's Mechun Asim, it just means that the water was just collected over there all day. So then that's the Tchum. It's private water. The Yitmernami, Amar Bichia Brav and Amar Shmuel, to confirm that this is probably what's going on. We also quoted Shmuel having the same point, B'mechun Asim, that our Mishnah is limited only to the case of the water that was Mechunas there all day. Tudats. Back to the Mishnah. The Shel Oli Bavel Karagli Hamamale. The broadest, the most public form of the well is the Oli Bavel. That's Karagli Hamamale. That follows the Tchum of just anybody who takes the water. Itmar. Okay, a new discussion here. Right, so what's the rule of the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, if anybody goes to the Bor Ole Regalim, then they take water and it's their own tchum. There isn't any other restrictions on that. But now listen to this interesting question. That's undisputed. Here's an interesting question. Milei v'nasen l'chaveiro. What happens if somebody asks me to get them some water and so I go over to the Bor Ole Bavel, Ole Regalim, and I take some water out for them? Whose tchum is the one that's going to apply to the water? Rav Nachman Amar, possibility being maybe it's me for taking the water out of the boar, which is what it says in the Mishnah, it's the Ragli Hamamaleh. Or possibility is that I did it for that person who asked me to do it, so maybe it's their tchum. That's what I did it for them. So this is a Machlokas Amorayim. Rav Nachman Amar Karagli Mishan Ismalulo, and Rav Sheshes Amar Karagli Hamamaleh. Machlokas Amorayim here, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Rav Nachman Amar Karagli Mishan Ismalulo. Rav Nachman says that the one that determines the tchum is the one who gets the water, not draws the water. The one that was drawn for. And Rav Sheshes, am I wrong? It's the one who pulls the water out of the boar. Okay, now, right away, we should be on our own able to see certain possible factors that might actually determine who should be right, and what they should actually be fighting about, and what really policies should be behind this machlokas. So, but for some reason here, this starts at the most complicated way, and it gets into the easier thing later. The Gemara says here, well, b'mayka mifligi, what are they arguing about? In other words, what broader issue does each one hold in order to lead to these rulings in our specific case? The Gemara says, well, here's what's going on. Mar savar beira de hefkeirahu, umar savar beira de shutfihu. They are looking at this bor ole regalim in different ways. That's what's behind the machlokas. We talk about the bor of the ole regalim as being a completely public thing. But how do you view that? It's public in what way? It's public because it's hefker? And that's the way you look at it? You look at it as this boar is out in the public, and it's hefker lakal, and that's the way you look at it. Or is it a different thing? You look at that as the communal property of all Jews. Is that the way you look at it? Well, you could see both possibilities, I guess. And so it says over here, here's the difference. Rashi has to do a lot of filling in a lot of gaps in the logic here. So this is how Rashi explains what was the intention of our Gemara. It says like this. It says, let's start with the Hefker Shita. The Hefker Shita is Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes, who holds that the guy who draws the water is the determinant of the Tchum. Doesn't matter that he's done it for somebody else. And here's why. Because Rav Sheshes holds the boar is Hefker. Because the boar is Hefker, then when I draw the water out of the boar, who is Kona the water? The drawer. The drawer. Now, the fact that the drawer did it for somebody else leads to, well, wait a second. What's the rule generally when there's a thing of Hefker, and I pick up a thing of Hefker for somebody else? In other words, I claim this on behalf of somebody else. So what is the halacha in that case? That's called Magbia Metzia Lachaveiro. I see a lost object over there. Anybody can come pick it up. I know my friend needs this, but I don't care about it. I would leave it there. I don't need it. like somebody left something out in this, I don't know, they left something out in the street or whatever, and so now it's a hefker thing. I don't need one of those. I know somebody needs one of those. So I pick it up, and I say, Bob's going to need this thing. So I pick it up for Bob. I say, okay, this is Bob's. Okay, this is machlokas in the Gemara about whether that works or not. Does Bob own it or not? Now, if not, then who owns it? Then who owns it? Well, presumably it means nobody. It's still hefker. So
Bob
the difference
has,
being,
no
there are two
das
differences.
Das.
What?
Has no das in this.
He didn't have das, but there's a zechiah that I knew he would want it, so I did it for him. So I'm zachin la'ad mashalab afanav. I can eat kona things for somebody who isn't even here because I know that they would want this. So the two differences, two very key differences are, what if I change my mind and I just said, you know what, actually, I really do need this. Or somebody said to me, you know, so can I at that point change my mind? If it already belongs to Bob, I'm stealing. If it's not, doesn't belong to Bob, then I could always let him change my mind and keep it. I haven't given it to him yet. The second difference of being, what if somebody sees this going on and that other person wants it and grabs it? You have no right to pick it up, Rob. I'm taking it for myself. Same kind of a thing. So this is a whole machlokas, whether hamagbim stealing chaver kana chaver or not. So Rashi says, in order for all of this to work, Rav Sheshes holds, no, you're not kona chaver. The other person is not kona. So when I'm a male the water from the boar for somebody else, they have no standing. I'm the only one who matters, and I'm Kona, the water for myself. And that's why it's Kiragli Mish and Ismalu Lo. That's what's going on. That, in other words, what? That Rav Sheshes holds, it's Hefker. I'm Kona from Hefker when I pull it out of the water, and it becomes mine, not the person, Shenismalu Lo. And those are the Shitos that you have. And there's one last Shita that you need to say, which is, when you're Kona Hefker, normally, when does Chum happen? Betchila Sayom. Well, Betchila Sayom was Hefker. There's no Tchum on the Kalish Shel Hefker, according to this. But Rav Sheshes holds, when you're Kona Kalim on Shabbos, then Rav Sheshes holds Yesh Breira. We're not free of Breira. Breira keeps coming up like five different times in the Sefer. So this is a Breira issue also. Yesh Breira. What does Breira do over here? It means like this. Betchila Sayom, I know somebody is likely to pick up this object when somebody does. And right now, at Tchilas Hayom, I know that's the person who is going to be Kovei of the Tchum, and therefore, even now, the Tchum of all those water molecules, which are wherever they are in the world, are all going to have the Tchum for the person who picks them up, and we're only going to know that when he actually draws the water from the well. So you have to hold, first of all, Rashi is holding the Boris Hefker, that have Mabim Tzilach Chaver, Lo Kana Chavero, and that Yesh Breira to make the Tchum happen when he picks the water out of the well. That's Rav Sheshes. What did Rav Nachman hold in all of this in order to say the other tzad? It says, well, he holds that the whole thing doesn't apply because it's not Hefker. Because he holds that the way you view the Bor Oli Regolim is Shutfin. And because it's Shutfin, that everybody has their own individual share. And therefore, if I take, somebody says to me, can you draw water for me? That's another way of saying that person has a share also in the Bor Oli Regalim. So they tell me, can you take some water out for me? So when I take the water out, I'm giving them their share. I have no role. I'm doing it. I'm just bringing them their share that they're entitled to on their own without the middleman really having any status. And therefore, it's the tchum of the person, shenis malu lo. That's the way the Gemara at first thinks is what is the nekuda samachlokas in this machlokas Rav Nachman or Sheshes. The Gemara says, Eisevei Rav al Rav Nachman. Rava attacks Rav Nachman by saying, there's something wrong here. This cannot be what's going on. Because what it really amounts to is, because nobody can hold that the boar of Oli Regalim is treated as a boar of Shutfin. That's not a viable Shita. And here's how he demonstrates this. And it's going to take about 10 lines or 15 lines to demonstrate that it's impossible that anybody can hold that the boar Oli Regalim has the status of boar of Shutfin. Okay, here we go. It requires assembling two brises together to make this happen. One, there is a Esri Rebeler of Nachman, Hareini Alecha Cherim. Okay, there is a brisa that says, this might actually be a Mishnah. It says, Hareini Alecha Cherim. Same kind of a thing as we said before. Let's say somebody takes a neder that you're not allowed to be nehene from any of me or my stuff. Okay, so then what's the rule? The rule is hamuder asur. So then that's true. So then that guy is not allowed to be nehene from any of my stuff. Harei ata alai cheirim? What if I say the reverse? What if I say, I'm not allowed to be nana from any of your stuff? Okay, so hanodara asur. So the one who said that, that's true. He's not allowed to be nana from any of the stuff of the other guy. What if he did both? Hareini alecha v'yata alai. So then they are mutually forbidden from being nehana from any stuff of each other. And shnehem asurim zeh bezeh. But now what about communal things? What about communal things? What is each one's restrictions with respect to communal property? So it says, here's what it says. It says in this b'raisa, it says, umutarim b'shel olei bavel v'yasurim b'shel osa ha'ir. It says, well, the olei bavel type objects, that each one is allowed, is still allowed to be nehene from. That would not be considered being nehene from the other person. But if it's shel osa ha'ir, if they're matters of their city property, that neither one would be permitted to benefit from city property. And now the Bryce continues to enumerate what are examples of these things. The Elohein Zerem Shel Olei Bavel. And the following would be examples of things that are called Olei Bavel, meaning the permissible category. Har Habayis, and the Lishkos, and the Azaros, right? Are the matters, the Beis HaMikdash things, all of the Beis HaMikdash property. Bor Shalem Zahadarech. And the Bor Oli Regalim. That's an example of stuff that each one could be nehene from. And incidentally, the Braisa continues. The Elohein Shel Osa Ha'ir, which are examples of a city property. HaRechov, and the Beis HaKnesses, and the Beis HaMerchatz. That's interesting. I mean, these guys, and neither of these guys would be allowed to go into the Shul or be nehene from the Shul, whatever that means. But interestingly, what you see over here is a very fascinating distinction. This is so important. This brisa over here, which shows a contrast between the property designation of a shul, for example, which is treated as the joint ownership. It's the partnership of the members of the ear or shul, whatever, versus the hektish, which is not that way. But what is it? What is that? It's hefker? It's not hefker. It's shutfus of a bigger population of Klal Yisrael? No, because then it's just a bigger ear. It's postulating the existence of an incorporated entity. It's describing that hekdesh is not a shutfus of individuals, but it has a separate status of an incorporation, which is a remarkable precedent for, you know, in our world that... That's what this brisa seems to be saying. It's saying that we don't view the hekdesh as being as belonging to the Am Yisrael. We treat it as being a separate entity. We're not going to treat it like it's hefker, but we're going to treat it as a kind of a separate entity. Therefore, it's not a violation of hana when either of these use that stuff. So in any case, so this is half of the kasha. And then the Gemara continues to say, V'i amrit ber de shutfihu amai mutter. If you're going to call the public bor shutfin, if anybody could hold that way, then you would have no way to explain why this brisa allowed the mudre hana to use the bor. V'hatanan hashutfin shenadru hana zemizeh asurim likanes lachatzer lerchotz or bebor lerchotz. So that's the second part of this mission. The mission says that washing in a pool or in a bor is considered a violation of hana. And therefore, if we treat the public bor, the bor oli regalim, as shutfin, which was one of the suggestions as to what was going on here, if Nachman is holding that way, so then you have no way to explain the brisa which permits mudri hana to be nehene from a bor oli regalim. Because if that were really shutfin, so then there would be no permission to use it because that would be a violation of the hana, as it says in this Mishnah, is that isuri hana goes so far as to forbid bathing in the other person's pool. The Gemara says, well, not quite. Hachanami, I agree with all of that, and I'm still maintaining that this is about the bor oli regalim can still have a status of shutfin, and you wouldn't be allowed to bathe in it, that's true. V'achamayaskinan l'malos. Marmi didei kamamale, umarmi didei kamamale. What you're not paying attention to, the Gemara says, is that that's true. A bor oli regalim I'm going to hold that that's a shutfus. And therefore, you're not allowed to be nehene from the bor oli regalim also if the hana is bathing. Because when you're being nehenah from bathing, you're being nehenah from the entire bor. As opposed to if all I'm doing is drawing water from it, I'm only being nehenah from those water molecules. But why does that matter? Well, because if it's a shutfus, the nature of the shutfus is that each one has the right to take what's theirs, to take their chalik out. And so when I take the water out of the bor, I'm not being nehenah from the other guy's thing, one drop. All of the water that I take out is my share of the shutfus. It's only when I'm doing something like bathing in the whole water that I'm being nehenah from like all of the sides of the bor, the whole bor, everything. So I'm being nehenah from all of the people who are shutfin in the bor. So that's why that's not permissible. But drawing water wouldn't be the same, and that would be permissible. So that's the first pshat. The first pshat in what's there of Nachman or Sheshes Machlokas. But then the Gemara says, hold on. This whole thing doesn't work anyway because of the suffer of Nachman Yesh Breira. But in order for all of this to work, we had to make Rav Nachman hold, and also Sheshes hold, Yesh Breira. Because by saying Yesh Breira, then that allows the Mishan Ismalulo to have the tchum determined based on that person's status. But we know that it's not true. And then we're going to show, and over the course of the next 10 lines, that Rav Nachman denies Breira. He holds Ein Breira. Let's take a look. Happens to be that when somebody dies and that there's a family, so that there's what's called the estate, and the estate is held, you know, but jointly by the heirs. So that's a funny kind of a status at that point. It's shared, the estate is shared, but the expectation is that people are going to divide it up. And so people are going to convert the estate into their individual and private ownerships. And so it's possible that they may choose to leave the estate as a partnership and to have them all mutually, or some of them mutually manage the estate. And it's possible for them to say, we haven't just gotten around to doing the division yet. So these are treated as two separate categories. The category of undistributed property or shared and joint ownership. So because those are two different distinctions, then the Mishnah identifies two matters where that'll make a difference in kind of opposite ways, as it happens. That's the way it plays out. One of these being the question of the kalbon for Meiser Sheni, for Machatzis HaShekel, and the other one being whether there's any chiyuv of Meiser Behema on animals that were born into the flock during the course of the year. And Rashi explains what all the drushes are based on over here, but really amounts to the following, that when the Morish dies, when the original owner of the property dies, that property all becomes now joint the estate. While it's in that status, then the halacha is that no kalbon is required for machatzis hashekel paid on behalf of any of the members of the joint estate. But at the same time, there is going to be a chiyuv of meiser behema, because we don't consider that shutfin. We consider that to be still kind of under the singular ownership of the morish, of the parent. As opposed to if they decided to split and to then create a partnership entity, the partnership entity then is no longer treated as the ownership of the original morish, but it's considered to be any partnership arrangement that exists. The consequences being is a patur of meiser behema for partners, but there's a chiyuv of kalbon for any machatzis hashekel money paid from on behalf of any of the other partners. Okay, just knowing that, so here's what it says in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that whether or not they decided ha'achana shutfin kisha chayav mekalbon, which means if they decided to do us to form a partnership arrangement from the tfusas habayis, from the estate, so then petur and meiser behema, because now it's a shutfus. Okay, but they were chayav mekalbon, but they no longer have a kind of a single person as being the one responsible for them, and therefore the machatzis ha-shekel that they would have to pay would have to include a kalbon surcharge. Kalbon is a surcharge when you pay on behalf of another person. But you don't have to pay this kalbon surcharge if you're paying the machatzis ha-shekel on behalf of your own family members. So in any case, like your own dependents. So it says here, but ukshechayavin b'maiser behema, which means that they haven't yet done the distribution of the estate. So the patermina kalbon. Okay, that's what it says in the Mishnah. Very vague Mishnah, just like many Mishnayos, has a lot behind it, but that's the issue. The issue is, did they divide up the estate, or did they remain as an undivided, undistributed estate? The Amar of Anan. Rav Anan says, "Lo shanu ela shechalku gedayim keneged tulayim utulayim keneged gedayim. Aval chalku gedayim keneged gedayim utulayim keneged tulayim. Things are different." Rav Anan says, "You have to pay attention to how did they choose to divide and combine this estate. If they did the division as they took overall assets and then they chose, you know, this is the amount of money in the value of the assets that is going to be my share and your share and his share." And then the distribution was done, whether any kind of assets, without paying attention necessarily to dividing the same set into equal shares. If that's the way the arrangement was made, so then we consider that pure shutfus. That's what Rav Anan says. That's that, and then all of these rules we just said apply. But if chalku gedayim keneged gedayim, tzalayim keneged tzalayim, so then in that case what they mean is like this. They looked at every asset by itself and they just divided them up into equal shares among all of the heirs. And if that's the way they did it, so then Rav Anan says, you know what happens in that case? Then in that case, we consider retroactively, because this is a Brayrid rule now, he says retroactively consider when the father died, each one directly inherited only those assets that they were eventually allotted. And so there's no joint, there's no common, there's no estate. Because if the way the distribution plays out is like that, so then Yesh Bereira tells me that Ze Chelko Hamagielo Mishar Rishon Elakach, that each one's share was what they actually inherited directly. Just as if the Morish said before he died, he left a will. And if the Morish leaves a will and he says, you know, these assets are going to this person, this one, that one, this one, that one. So then there's never a point where there is an estate, because everything is accounted for. And then the heir who inherits, inherits directly without it first having been joint or communal and then divided up. And so that all is an example of holding braver. Now Rav Nachman right now says, wrong. Rav Nachman Amar, afilo chalku gedayim keneged gedayim etlan keneged tulayim ein omer zechal ko magiyam eshav vishonu lekach. He says, wrong. You don't hold. In other words, what he says, he denies braver. That's all. So all of this is just a way of saying that Rav Nachman denies braver. So back to an Amud Aleph, when Rav Nachman held that the water of the Mamale, takes on the tchum of the one who was before, that can't be explained based on this whole analysis that we just said all along, which because that's rooted in Rav Nachman holding of braver, and he doesn't. In which case, then we have to have a different explanation for what he held. And the Gemara says the very simple one, which is, okay, so Allah dekuli alma bered the hefkerihu. Okay, let's go back to saying that the bor oli regalim is really hefker. So then all you have to do is explain, well, why does Rosh Hashanah hold his way? And why does Rav Nachman hold his way? And the Gemara says, well, it's easy. Hacha mayaskin, hacha b'magbiyam etzin l'chaveru k'anachaveru k'miflagi. What is the rule when you pick up water for somebody else? If I pick up a hefker item for somebody else, who owns it? That's the whole thing. So Rav Mar Savar Kana, but Mar Savar Lo Kana. Presumably it means Rav Nachman holds Lo Kana Chaveiro, so the one who gets it is the Mamale. And Rav Sheshes holds Kana Chaveiro, so the one who's Kona is a beneficiary. Tosas points out, you have lots of problems with this very simple pshat, but we're not going to deal with them. But this is pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward as it is. Okay, everybody. Sure.